Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayen Dangbuer in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Monday, May 13th, 2019. The AU and the UN say it's time to form the hybrid court.
The Peace and Security Council has an approach that's healing, reconciliation and justice. This has to happen.
And some residents say suspending almost all court hearings during growing season violates their rights.
There are some cases which are very urgent that need to be done. And if those cases are suspended, they may increase more conflict among the people who are having some problems.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A joint United Nations African Union mission is pressuring the South Sudan government to quickly form a hybrid court, as stipulated in the peace deal, to punish perpetrators of abuse during the 5.5-year conflict. UN and AU officials who visited Juba this past weekend say forming the court and trying rights violators is one way to end impunity and restore stability. Waki Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
UN Undersecretary for Peacekeeping Operations, Jean-Pierre Lacroix, the AU Commissioner for Peace and Security, Smail Cheguei, and Regional Bloc, Intergovernmental Authority on Development Special Envoy to South Sudan, Smail Weiss, visited South Sudan for 2 days to provide support to South Sudan's peace process. Speaking to reporters in Juba at the end of the visit, Cheguei said the AU is ready to sign a memorandum of understanding with South Sudan to not waste any more time in forming an AU-South Sudanese hybrid court.
The Peace and Security Council has an approach that's healing, reconciliation and justice. This has to happen, and we also recalled to the authorities here that we are ready to sign immediately the memorandum of understanding relating to the hybrid court. We wanted it as soon as possible in place.
Cheguei says the AU, IGAD and the UN want to see commanders of South Sudan's former warring parties take responsibility and punish all of their forces involved in committing crimes during the civil war.
What we are expecting from all the commanders on the ground and all the authorities to make sure that this issue is taken very seriously and those who are committing such crimes brought to justice.
The hybrid court is an integral part of the justice mechanism defined in the Revitalized Peace Agreement to hold accountable all those involved in committing atrocities during the conflict. Last month, the South Sudan government signed a $3.7 million U.S. contract with the U.S. lobby firm Gainful Solutions, which states that part of its mission is to convince to block formation of the court, something that was roundly criticized by Western diplomats, South Sudan opposition leaders, and civil society activists. Rajab Mohandis, head of the Juba-based Organization for Responsive Governance, says there are delays in forming the court because some South Sudanese opposition and government leaders fear that some of their own military commanders and other high-ranking officials will be found guilty by the court.
There are so many perpetrators to this conflict, and some of the perpetrators could be high profile individuals in the parties, and therefore that would mean a fear of implementing this provision, because the court might turn out to find some of the party leaders responsible for some of the crimes committed. So that in itself partly indicates why, could explain why the parties are very slow in actually pursuing the course of establishment of this court.
Mohandi says the former warring parties have already agreed to the justice mechanisms in the peace deal, which include the hybrid court.
And so we, as part of the peace process, will be calling on the parties to ensure that they meet their obligations in implementing all provisions of the peace agreement. The implementation should not be selective.
U.S. Ambassador to South Sudan Tom Hasek told the South Sudan in Focus last week that Washington is watching for any South Sudanese individual who obstructs implementation of the peace deal and stands ready to impose more sanctions on officials who continue to obstruct the deal's implementation.
If we need to, of course, we still can apply additional sanctions. For instance, if there are businesses that are still, or corrupt individuals or businesses that are still, we find are promoting conflict.
Presidential spokesman Attorney Wek Attorney declined to comment on whether or not the South Sudan government is ready to sign a memorandum of understanding with the African Union to pave the way for forming the hybrid court, referring all questions to Information Minister Michael Makuei, whose phone number did not go through when called. The UN, AU and IGAD officials say while they appreciate the agreement by the parties to extend the pre-transitional period for another 6 months to finish the work that needs to be done, such as security arrangements and determining the number of states, the pre-transitional period should not be extended again. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Jonglei State residents are criticizing Jonglei authorities for suspending court hearings for 6 months so that people concentrate on producing food during that time. Officials say they have also canceled all traditional wrestling matches until November for the same reason, as we hear from Deng Gai Deng from VOA in Bor Town.
34-year-old Bor resident Deng Biar is defending his sister's divorce case in Bor County Court. Biar says the state's decision to drop all court hearings except murder cases impinges on his rights as a citizen.
Actually, agriculture is the best activity, but in relation to these issues of cases of the judgment, there are some cases which are very urgent that need to be done. And if those cases are suspended, they may increase more conflict among the people who are having some problems.
48-year-old Kulang Kwal Lual has filed a case in Bor County Court against someone who he says owes him two cows. Speaking in Dinka, Kwal says he too feels he has been denied justice and warns he may just take the law into his own hands.
Stopping court cases is unacceptable. What will happen to vulnerable people whose resources are being taken by people who think they are strong and can use force? For example, me. My cows were forcefully taken on March 3rd, and this is why I am here in this court. I need justice, and I need it as soon as possible. Okay, if the courts are suspended by the government, then somebody like me will have to find a way of getting justice. Since force was applied on me, I may have to use my own force too, because there is nowhere to seek justice.
Bo resident Alewa Nyath filed a case against an organization in the Jonglei State High Court.
I see this one is very serious, it's very painful to me and to others who are following their criminal cases. I don't know how it is painful to them. But 6 months, and if government issue out the decree saying cases will be suspended for 6 months, that one is going to be painful. I ask government to look into this issue.
Anyang Ajindeng, a legal advocate in Bo Town, says the government decision to suspend court hearing is unconstitutional. And besides, he says, such a decision should come from the Chief Justice, not the executive.
According to information I have, is for cultivation season. So the government of Jonglei State is calling everybody to go for cultivation. But judiciary is an independent body. If there is an order concerning the judiciary.
Jonglei State Information Minister Atong Kwal Manyang says there is a good reason the courts will only hear murder cases for the next 6 months. She says it is a farming season and state officials want citizens to focus on farming during the rainy season so they can feed their families rather than fighting cases in court.
We have to prepare as a state so that our people cultivate, and there are some few points under that order which are very important. The first one is that all courts must stop seeing cases except murder cases. So any other case in the court must be stopped, and the court will deal only with cases that are to do with murder. Until November, this is a season where people, of course, must have cultivated by then, and it's harvesting season.
Kual says citizens who don't like the order can forward their complaints to state authorities.
Always, whatever is passed by the government or in any institution, there are always critics. There will always be people who are not agreeing with the decision. So those people are not a surprise to us. They will always be there. They will disagree with the decision. But at the end of the day, what is important is any group that is engaged with these areas, if they feel that this is not fair, then they are open to come and say why. They have to also bring their point.
Advocate Ajit says the government's decision to suspend court hearings will affect the legal system across the entire state. He is urging state authorities to reverse the order. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng, reporting in Bor.
This just in, Sudanese ousted President Omar al-Bashir has been charged in connection with the killing of protesters during the anti-regime demonstrations that led to the end of his 30-year rule, according to Sudan's prosecutor general, who made the announcement today. Omar al-Bashir and others have been charged for inciting and participating in the killing of demonstrators, the office of Sudan's acting prosecutor general said. There has been no comment from Mr. Bashir since he was removed from office on April 11th, according to international media. At the beginning of the month, Bashir was ordered to appear before a prosecutor for questioning over allegations of money laundering and terror financing. Some Ugandan officials say they are concerned about armed militia members infiltrating refugee camps for South Sudanese refugees. The External Security Organization says the militia is recruiting both South Sudan refugees and Ugandans to fight in South Sudan. The militia members are also accused of stealing food from refugees. Catherine Nambi has this report for VOA from Kampala.
Ugandan security officials are reporting an increased number of armed South Sudanese entering Uganda in Lamu District. James Nibinson Chidega is the resident district commissioner for Lamu District. Chidega, who heads the district's security committee, says the rebels from the Sudanese People's Liberation Army in opposition, SPLA-IO, have pitched camp at the Uganda-South Sudan border. From there, they easily cross to Uganda. He says they are there because of the slow pace of efforts to bring opposition fighters into the South Sudan military under last year's peace deal.
There is ceasefire still, but this peace talk which is going on, they have not yet come to conclusion. So the rebel from South Sudan have not yet been joined with the government force. They have their own camp around the border here, our border, near our border, and other places, still waiting for the final signing of the peace agreement.
Chidega says the Juba government accuses Uganda of feeding rebels since they raid camps and steal food.
They always come and get food and drive with it to South Sudan. That's not right. The food must be consumed here. They must be within here. Because now we are getting complaints from the generals from there that food that are coming from the camp are the one now being supplied with the rebels.
Joseph Ochet is the Director General of Uganda's External Security Organization, ESO. He says the armed South Sudanese are recruiting militia fighters in the refugee settlements.
And they have come with a lot of threats. They have brought into those refugee camps a number of weapons. They're using the camps to recruit, and some of the recruits are Ugandans to go and fight in South Sudan. And they're causing a lot of what we'd call insecurity within Uganda.
Jessica Ababiku is a legislator from Adjumani district, which hosts refugee settlements. She says more must be done to block the South Sudanese militia from entering the country.
The police are trying their best, but they have failed to help the people. People are robbed, things are taken successfully. So at the border points, we need a detach. Uganda is hospitable. How do we sustain this hospitality when people are being threatened from a neighborhood country?
But Ochwet, with the SO, says the Uganda government is handling the situation.
It's a big challenge for us, but we are fighting it. We are increasing on our deployments in those camps almost on a daily basis.
Uganda is home to over 800,000 South Sudan refugees, most of whom fled fighting between forces loyal to President Salva Kiir and those backing his former vice president, Riek Machar. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Talks in Cameroon on the separatist crisis have begun. We'll have those details when we return.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
Tell us one of your favorite proverbs and what it means.
Two ways are better than one. I like it a lot because it tells you that when two people do something, there will be good results.
Never scratch your brother's back with a knife when facing a known situation. This simply means when you have a problem, instead of us looking at the problem as one people, we are dividing ourselves. You are fighting your brother, and then the enemy who is coming from somewhere.
And basically it means that a banana yields well when you take good care of it. Mostly people use it for men who don't take care of their wives, and you just go out there, you want a ready-made thing.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. The UN Security Council is set to informally discuss the separatist crisis in Cameroon for the first time today. The discussion comes at a time when the conflict is escalating, with many internally displaced persons from the English-speaking regions escaping to the French-speaking zones, where some live in desperate conditions. Moki Edwin Kinzika reports from Yaoundé.
President, don't send me for come back when I say me this trouble in end.
This is Cameroon's Prime Minister Joseph John Goute visiting the English-speaking town of Bamenda on Saturday, begging people to ask their relatives who have joined separatist fighters to come back home. John Goute says President Paul Biya has sent him to say he is ready for an all-inclusive dialogue but will not discuss separating Cameroon. As the Prime Minister went begging for peace, the military announced that the war against the separatists had intensified with many of their camps destroyed and at least 2 dozen fighters killed. The baby of 38-year-old Flora Yenos cries at the Obili Catholic Church in the French-speaking capital Yaoundé. She says she escaped fighting last week from her village Bafanje in the English-speaking northwest region. She says she lost her husband in a battle with the military.
I call my sister. I say, "Where are they for Yaoundé? I beg me, can't tell me."
She says when she arrived in Yaoundé, she and her four kids did not have anything to eat and drink and lacked a place to sleep. She says the Catholic Church allowed her to lodge in a classroom and asked Christians to contribute for their upkeep after all of her relatives had told her they could not assist because they were already hosting many IDPs. She says her children are very sick and lack food. Cameroon's unrest began in 2016 when English-speaking teachers and lawyers demonstrated against the growing dominance of French in the officially bilingual country. The government responded with a crackdown, and separatists launched an independence movement, saying they were defending their people. The United Nations says at least 500,000 people have been displaced by the fighting. Allegra Baoche, coordinator of the UN system in Cameroon, says their humanitarian needs are increasing by the day.
We are fully aware of how many people are suffering on so many different needs, whether it's health, education, protection, violence, and I think the commitment is there to try and reach as many people as possible. We've always said that the primary responsibility for the protection of populations is with the government, so our action has to come in complementarity.
Last week, Human Rights Watch said 1,800 people have been killed in the war and said it had documented cases of the government detaining and torturing alleged separatists and holding some incommunicado detention. Ilaria Alegrozé is senior researcher for Human Rights Watch in Central Africa.
We have compounded accounts from former detainees with information provided by former detainees, families and lawyers, as well as forensic experts who have reviewed and analyzed a number of photos and videos showing torture or signs of torture on the bodies of the detainees.
Human Rights Watch says it is calling on the United Nations Security Council to condemn torture and incommunicado detention and call for the government to end these practices that have persisted since the crisis began. Paul Atanganji, Cameroon Territorial Administration Minister, says separatists are responsible for the wave of abductions, killing and torching of public buildings, including schools and hospitals. He says the government, in its effort to bring peace, will forgive fighters who laid down their weapons.
I want to make it very clear. Those who voluntarily lay down their weapons will not go to jail. Those are instructions from the President of the Republic. They will be Cameroonians, I can call them, born again.
Analysts say since discussions at the United Nations Security Council will be informal, they just expect Cameroon to be condemned for its poor handling of the crisis and asked to organize an all-inclusive dialogue. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Zimbabwe has clamored for outside investment in recent years, but villagers north of the capital are resisting a Chinese mining project they say will spoil the environment and fail to bring them much benefit. Columbus Mavhunga reports from Harare.
Those are villagers from Domboshava, a rocky area north of Zimbabwe's capital, disputing a Chinese company's decision to start quarry mining. 70-year-old Florence Nyamande is among those saying no to the proposed project by Ayua Juan Company.
The Chinese are the money mongers of the Zimbabweans. They take the riches here, they take it to China. They don't develop our places, so we don't need them here. Seriously, with a deeper heart, with a deeper mind, seriously, we are disappointed. We said no and no, and that is multiplicated no.
The villagers do not think Ayua Jianye will create the 500 jobs in the area it promised. They also say the quarry mining will leave large ponds filled with dirty water. Zimbabwe Deputy Minister of Information Energy Mutodi, who is the parliament member for the area, is also against the $500 million quarry mining project. He says he is not going against President Emmerson Mnangagwa's mantra that Zimbabwe is open for business.
It's open to business, but not business that is going to affect our environment. The people it's unanimous. We want to preserve the environment. We want our community to develop, yes, but let our environment remain intact. We cannot have a situation where people come here, mine, and take away the proceeds, enjoy the proceeds in other countries, yet our people remain poor.
Mutodi notes that the Chinese company is advertised for only 40 jobs in the area, less than one-tenth of what it promised. Percy Mudzidzwa, whose company Geo Global Environmental Solutions is representing the Chinese firm, rejects the allegations that 20,000 people would be affected by the 33-hectare mining project. Some locals say the project will affect a graveyard and a natural spring. Mudzidzwa says that is not the case.
Even a grave is not going to be moved. But there's a misconception of saying we propose that the graves will be fenced. There's a spring which is just above the gravesite. We also propose that water will be fenced too.
Now the project awaits for the country's Environmental Management Agency to make a final call if the Chinese company can go ahead. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
Also in Harare, the city has a long history of periodic water shortages. Reporter Kudzai Zivinivashi looks at the various causes.
Michael Chideme is the city council spokesperson. He explains why Harare is going through a dry spell.
We are in a drought season. We didn't receive enough rains this season. So we have since decommissioned one of our treatment plants. So this is putting pressure on the remaining one treatment plant, that is Moton Jeffrey, which is also not operating at optimum level.
He adds that the shortage of foreign currency in the country has also affected the availability of potable water in the city.
Shortage of water treatment chemicals as a result of forex shortages in the country or in the economy. All our chemicals are imported from outside Zimbabwe and we have to pay for them in US dollars. So we need that money to be able to fund the purchase of those water treatment chemicals. Also, the quality of our raw water is very bad now, meaning we need more water treatment chemicals, which again goes back to the issue of forex.
Lorin Mupasiri is the director of the Combined Harare Residents Association. She says the water shortages could have been prevented.
One of the main causes is actually lack of funding in terms of investing in the water infrastructure and also investing in the water treatment process. And the reason why funds are lacking, corruption, mismanagement of funds within the city of Harare.
Mupasiri says, in light of the prevailing drought, wetlands would act as reservoirs, but the wetlands in Harare are often parcelled out for development projects. Combined Harare Residents Association says Harare loses a decent amount of treated water through its dilapidated water infrastructure. This is happening against a mismanagement of a $144 million loan taken from China with the intention to revamp water infrastructure. Earlier this year, Harare and some parts of the country experienced yet another cholera outbreak, which claimed lives. A disease that has often spread due to unsafe water sources residents opt for when clean water is not coming through their taps. Chideme says the long-term solution would be building other dams around the city. Mupasiri says political will to resolve the matter will be critical and government should treat the water crisis with the urgency it deserves, since potable water is a human right. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
And that's our show for this Monday. We leave you with the song Africa Moto by Mose Sesingo. We've been listening to Mose Sesingo with the song Africa Moto. I'm Ayen Dangbior in Washington. Thanks for being here. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.